Next, Desiree Heligers reads an excerpt from Craig Steven Wilder's Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of American Universities. It illuminates the long history of medical experimentation on people of color in the U.S., and that challenges claims about scientific practice as liberatory, environmentally friendly, and insulated from dominant ideologies. Desiree?
What a piece of work is man! How noble in reason! How infinite in faculties! In form and moving, how express and admirable! In action, how like an angel! In apprehension, how like a god!
So I'm going to be doing a reading this morning from Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of America's Universities by Craig Steven Wilder. And it is published in 2013. And it's part of a kind of deeper examination that's going on across the country of the ways in which universities in the U.S. are implicated in the long history of slavery and the medical dissection and exploitation of people of color. You can hear Wilder interviewed in a couple of segments of Democracy Now! That are available online. And I think this is a book that should be required reading at every university in the U.S. So if you're having a really stressful morning, you might not enjoy this reading. As early as 1648, the Reverend John Eliot had observed that plantations needed anatomists to advance religious work among Indians by countering the powwows with science. The Puritan missionary recognized the strategic benefits of spreading European science and the social rewards of allowing colonial doctors to improve their skills. Eliot did not believe that dissection would discover eternal differences or racial divisions between Indians and Christians. Rather, he may have been encouraged by a contemporaneous event. Giles Furman, a graduate of Cambridge University, who became a gentleman farmer and physician in Ipswich, Massachusetts, performed a dissection for students interested in medicine. Furman's anatomy lesson came just prior to Eliot's call for instructional dissections. In the following century, the governors of Harvard took up the task of promoting anatomy. In the summer of 1712, the trustees resolved to give the students the opportunity to dissect, once in 4 years, some malefactor that the court could provide. The genesis of American medical science corresponded to the rise of anatomy and the ascent of the concept of race. The study of anatomy as the foundation of medicine is a truth so well established and so universally acknowledged as to leave no room for observation, William Nisbet wrote in his compilation of the Edinburgh Medical Curriculum. Race governed the intellectual cultures of the Atlantic world. Nisbet's exploration of anatomy started by asserting that racial difference, like sex, was certain. Anatomical dissection, in particular, promised answers to questions about the nature of humankind that had lingered in science and theology. On his return journey from a 1773 trip to South Carolina, Josiah Quincy Jr. attended a lecture of young Dr. Shippen at the Philadelphia Medical College. Quincy was highly impressed with Shippen's knowledge, but even more taken with the facilities. The curiosities of this hospital are far beyond anything of the kind in North America. Shortly after the founding of Dartmouth, Dr. Joseph Lewis, a personal physician to President Eleazar Wheelock, peeled the skin from the body of a deceased black man named Cato and boiled the corpse in a kettle to free the skeleton for study. He took Cato's skin to be tanned at the shop that served the college, then used it to dress his instrument case. Physicians, surgeons, and students on numerous campuses conducted anatomical dissections and created anatomical specimens decades before their institutions opened medical schools. Human bodies were even more of a commodity once medical programs were organized. Dartmouth's faculty struggled with the legislation to access corpses, an issue that drove one of its founding faculty, Nathan Smith, to Yale. There were other ways to acquire bodies. In 1811, Dartmouth's medical school moved into its own building, where the basement was soon piled with human and non-human bones. The medical students entertained themselves with this collection by using it to terrorize the campus and the town at night. A number of those skeletons were likely those of enslaved and free black people who had worked for Dartmouth. Although slavery was declining in New Hampshire, the college had been one of the largest slaveholders in the colony and the state, and the officers buried enslaved and free black laborers in the college cemetery. The medical profession and medical schools in colonial North America were founded on the bodies of the poor and subjected. Harvard's governors expected that the corpses of criminals would be transferred to the school, just as John Eliot had assumed that Indians could be dismembered. However, Christians generally judged the value of science apart from the appropriateness or morality of scientific techniques. The introduction of anatomy to North American colleges was disquieting, since there was little consensus about whose bodies could be breached. Okay, again, this is a reading from Craig Stephen Wilder's Ebony and Ivy. Colonial students who studied in Europe had already experienced the social tensions caused by instructional dissection. The elder Alexander Monroe moved his anatomy classes out of the Surgeons' Hall to the Edinburgh campus to hide from the public. In April 1725, a mob attacked his students for stealing corpses from the nearby Greyfriars Kirkyard. The administration paid soldiers to protect the University of Glasgow from mobs seeking to retaliate against the medical faculty. When the governors proposed relocating the anatomy labs to the new Hunterian Museum, the staff protested that such a move would make them the targets of violence. William Hunter studied and researched at Glasgow and Edinburgh before moving to London, where he took advantage of new regulations that allowed for instructional dissection in medical corpses. John Hunter began his career helping his brother secure bodies for his popular anatomical lectures, which used Parisian-style interactive learning. Glasgow's faculty and students ultimately began exploiting their proximity to Ireland to meet their needs without disturbing their city. In the 1830s, a scandal involving murders to supply corpses shook Edinburgh and claimed the career of the leading anatomist, Robert Knox. On April 20th, 1773, Daniel Hughes published a notice for an anatomy class for midwives and practitioners in Providence, Rhode Island. He claimed a lengthy career in surgery and medicine, familiarity with a wealth of medical texts, and a reputation among leading physicians. For a nominal fee, Hughes offered medical instruction or consultations on medical cases. As evidence of his professional standing and accomplishment, he added that the governor of Massachusetts had awarded him the body of a Negro malefactor, which he wired into a skeleton for use as a teaching tool and guide for setting bones and joints. White people also still had ample reason to worry about their fate after death. In 1764, the King's College trustee, John Watts, promised Robert Governor Monckton that he would recommend the addition of an anatomist to the faculty, but warned that there was little hope of success given a lack of funds and a shortage of students. Popular disdain for doctors and medical training contributed to his doubts. "We have so many of the faculty already destroying His Majesty's good subjects," Watts joked. "Then the public had rather one half were hanged that were already practicing than breed up a new swarm." Such fears affected every level of society. Later in the century, President George Washington's deathbed instructions to his family, friends, and personal slave, William Lee, included a reminder to have me decently buried and do not let my body be put into the vault in less than 3 days after I am dead. Money and status provided some comfort in death, such as the security of being placed in church tombs and vaults in fenced churchyards, practices that acquired new social meaning in the age of anatomy. Captain Jasper Farmer, the slave trader and merchant whose servants helped organize the 1741 conspiracy in Manhattan, was shot aboard the ship Charming Jenny by sailors whom he was trying to impress into service during the French and Indian War. His militia company escorted his body to Trinity Church, where it was interred next to the altar. In 1788, his wife, Maria Farmer, died. Her funeral followed the ancient Dutch custom. Mourners enjoyed spiced wine and tobacco pipes before accompanying her body from her home at Hanover Square to the church. The coffin was draped in black cloth with a Dutch epigraph on a copper plaque. She was entombed next to her husband at Trinity in a service presided over by Anglican and Dutch clergy. Slave trading had purchased the farmers some eternal comfort. Most corpses had no such protections. By 1769, Joseph Warren, a student at Harvard, had organized an underground anatomy club. His younger brother, John Warren, later transformed this group into a secret society, the Spunkers, to procure human bodies for instruction. Their adventures included sneaking about in the evening in boats, in carts, and on foot, looking for new graves. John Warner did most of his demonstrations with the assistance of 7 Harvard students who went on to successful medical careers. The American Revolution advanced the medical arts in Cambridge by generating a reliable supply of British and Hessian dead. In 1782, the year before the British surrender, Harvard's trustees established a medical college and appointed John Warren to the first professorship in anatomy and surgery. The war also accelerated the professionalization of medicine in New Haven, where a medical society emerged immediately after the peace. Human tissue was the currency of medical science. An advertisement for an anatomy corps in Philadelphia promised real human body parts. The medical factory at Columbia organized medical faculty, an association to encourage the study of surgery and anatomy. Doctors at Rutgers Medical College on Duane Street in New York lured students with assurances that its anatomy professors teaches with the knife, dissecting in front of the class, displaying and describing the pieces, and offering opportunities for student interaction and private instruction. In 1789, New York began formally supplying medical colleges and doctors with the cadavers of executed felons, a controversial post-mortem punishment and extension of the power of the state. The legislation also assigned penalties for grave robbing. Aristotelian notions that accepted the viability of the lower classes failed to resonate in a society inching toward republicanism. In 1765, the year that Shippen became professor of anatomy at Philadelphia, a mob of sailors violently interrupted his class, destroyed his lab, confiscated severed human limbs, attacked his carriage, and vandalized his house. The tensions were not limited to the city of brotherly love. Wealthier people who lived near a hospital or a medical college sat graveside by the burial of relatives or friends, hired watchmen to look after the deceased, and even exhumed caskets to confirm that bodies had not been resurrected. So this has been a reading from Craig Stephen Wilder's Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of American Universities. I offered to you as a co-ann, and I'm not going to provide the answers today. Thank you.